Hello, this is Dr. Laura Hannes-Webb of VisionarySoul.com, author of The Gift of ADHD and Listening to Depression for the Sweet Spot program. Tune in weekly to find where your passion meets your purpose. This show is committed to helping you find, embrace, and live in your sweet spot. You can find us online at sweetspotpodcast.com. And this week, I'll be interviewing Dr. Carol Dweck, a professor of psychology at Stanford University and author of Mindset, The New Psychology of Success. Welcome, Dr. Dweck.
It's a pleasure to be here, Laura.
Well, I think the idea in your book is so exciting. Can you tell our audience what is the difference between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset, and based on some ideas in the latest research about the brain, and how do these ideas affect all areas of our growth?
People who have a fixed mindset believe that their abilities are just these fixed traits carved in stone. You have a certain amount, and that's that. And because they believe this, they become very focused on validating their abilities and proving their abilities instead of growing their abilities. Other people, by contrast, have what I call a growth mindset. They believe that their abilities are things that can be cultivated throughout life through education, effort, perseverance. As a result, that's what they do. They don't worry about how they're going to look in one particular situation. They take the long view of growth and development.
Now, this isn't just a new self-helpy idea. Your ideas are actually rooted in research on the brain. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've learned about the brain that validates what you have to say about the benefits of having a growth mindset?
Mm-hmm. First, I've been doing research on this for over 20 years, showing that people, students who believe in the growth mindset end up being more motivated and being higher achievers. Second, lots and lots of research is coming out on the brain showing its enormous plasticity, its ability to grow and be reshaped through experience and the kinds of learning that kids do in school have, that kind of learning has an enormous impact on how the brain develops. We also teach kids and adults about this idea, the fact that your brain grows new connections every time you learn, and the fact that you get smarter in various areas in various ways as you apply yourself and learn. This idea, this understanding of the brain is tremendously motivating. We've shown that it raises students' grades. That's been shown by us and other researchers for adolescents, for college students, for business school students.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been shown over a wide spectrum, just understanding that you can grow your abilities and have an impact on your brain through learning is tremendously motivating.
So even just someone listening to this podcast can count on the fact that their brain may be growing right now.
Yes, if they're thinking hard and applying it.
It is such an exciting idea. And so in addition to learning, are there other ways that you can encourage children and adults to adopt this growth mindset?
There are a number of ways to urge them to adopt. We have one intervention that we call Brainology. It's in development. It's a computer-based program where students actually, in this interactive computer module, they visit brain labs, they do brain experiments, they see visualizations of how the brain grows with experience and learning. So that's one way.
Mm-hmm.
Another way is just to teach adults neuroscience and show them the research on the enormous plasticity of the brain. And another way is to have people think of experiences in their own lives where they thought they weren't capable of something, and then they did it, and they're good at it. Mm. Think of other people that you thought could never learn something, could never succeed at something, and now they're experts.
That's such a great point. And one of the fascinating things that comes out of your book, and every parent on this planet should hear this, especially it seems like in today's culture, but you make the case that praising ability can jeopardize success down the road. That's like revolutionary. Can you say some more about that?
Yes, I can. We undertook this research at the height of the self-esteem movement, when the gurus were telling parents and teachers to praise at every opportunity, and the more lavish and global the praise, the better. And I thought, wait a minute, I've been studying children's motivation and achievement for years, and it's the vulnerable kids who are obsessed with their intelligence. Maybe praising the intelligence isn't going to boost confidence. It's going to put them into this fixed mindset where they think, I have only a certain amount, it's being judged. So the great thing about research is you can put this to the test, and we did. We took hundreds of fifth grade students. We gave them an IQ test. After the first portion, some of them were praised for their intelligence and some were praised for their effort. We saw an immediate impact. When we asked them what they wanted to do next, the ones praised for intelligence wanted easy tasks. They wanted to keep on looking smart. The ones praised for effort chose challenging tasks they could learn from.
Wow, that's amazing.
Then we gave them all a hard task, and the ones praised for intelligence crashed. They lost confidence in their ability, because if success meant they were smart, failure meant they weren't. They lost interest in the task, and their performance deteriorated. Mm-hmm. And the opposite happened for children praised for effort. And that could have been anything about the process, the strategy, the perseverance, the improvement. The last thing that happened was that students praised for effort when asked to write down and communicate their scores anonymously to another child. 40% of them lied. They lied about their scores, always in one direction. So the praise for intelligence made them so invested in being smart that they couldn't admit a flaw.
Got it. Okay. Wow. That's incredible. And I mean, there's also a message in there that that this ability not to be discouraged by failure, and actually not even to think of it as failing,
mm-hmm.
but to think of it as learning.
Yes.
Making that translation has a powerful effect on motivation.
Exactly. And the kids who were praised for effort understood that. They understood it was about learning. It was about the process of learning and not just looking smart.
Wow. That's a really important lesson. And, you know, in the culture of parenting today, we most people aren't hearing that.
They're not. And I've gotten tons of letters from parents saying that they wholeheartedly believed in intelligence praise, and they have these really fragile children.
Really?
Who need the praise all the time, who won't try hard things, are afraid of mistakes, and they didn't understand what happened because they thought they were doing the right thing.
Well, even interestingly, even underlying this idea is the deeper idea that many people believe that IQ is a fixed quantity. Mm-hmm. And you also, it was very sort of illuminating, say that even the person who invented Binet, the IQ test, this really came as a surprise to me, never thought it was fixed in the first place, and that for him it was about finding the practice and training and the method for becoming more intelligent than we were before.
Exactly. Alfred Binet, who invented the IQ test, had an extreme growth mindset. He just invented the test to identify children who needed a different curriculum so they could get back on track to getting smarter. He would be twirling in his grave if he knew his test was used in a fixed mindset framework to measure this fixed IQ. IQ is not fixed. It's also not a measure of potential. A potential to learn is something that unfolds as children apply themselves vigorously. He did not mean this to be a measure of something fixed and underlying. He meant it to be a tool to promote learning.
That's right. And you even quote him in your book as saying about this fixed mindset, mm-hmm. He says, we must protest and react against this, what he calls brutal pessimism,
mm-hmm.
Which I love that because it seems that this, what he's calling a brutal pessimism is for many, even well-trained psychologists, is what we believe, IQ. It determines
yeah.
fate and... So this is very illuminating. And you also mentioned earlier that you were doing your work in kind of the heart of the self-esteem movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I have even sat on, dissertation committees where people were saying that, all the research shows, that this, boosting people's self-esteem has these great outcomes. And your book overturns that also. Can you talk some more about how you see self-esteem, really?
Yes. Yes. These quick fixes for self-esteem, like the intelligence praise, they don't work. They boost kids for a minute, or they boost adults for a minute. I make a very strong distinction between that temporary boost, that fragile self-esteem, and real self-esteem. And what I believe is that we cannot hand people self-esteem on a silver platter by praising their traits. We have to teach people how to get self-esteem, how to love challenges, how to embrace mistakes, how to persist in the face of failure, how to keep going until they improve and master new things. And this is how people will build and maintain their self-esteem. We just finished some really interesting studies, if I can tell you about them for 1 minute.
Oh, wonderful. Yes.
We had college students, work on a very hard test. They did poorly. And then we gave them a choice of ways that they could recover their self-esteem. The students in a fixed mindset who believed their intelligence was just a fixed trait chose to boost their self-esteem by looking at the scores and strategies of other students who had taken the test who had done really poorly, much even more poorly than they had.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to look down on people. They wanted to look at failures, and that made them feel better about themselves. But they hadn't remedied their deficit or learned anything new.
Right.
The students in a growth mindset wanted to look at people who had outperformed them. They wanted to look at superior strategies and performance. And that made them feel good about themselves because, in fact, they had learned something and then they had taken steps to fix their deficit.
Wow, that is fascinating. It's the difference between making yourself feel good but not learning anything and challenging yourself and learning from people who are ahead of you.
Right,
that's
exactly.
Incredible.
And one is kind of false self-esteem.
Right.
And the other is constructive, true self-esteem.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, so constructive, meaning that you're continuing to build it.
Yes.
You're building the actual skills that are the real foundation of self-esteem.
Exactly.
Yeah, that is a completely new approach. And in your book, you also say that these mindsets can affect all areas of your life, even relationships.
Mm-hmm.
How would this benefit someone who wanted to improve their relationships?
Often in a relationship, when things go wrong, people in a fixed mindset will say, well, that's just me, I can't change, or that's my partner, he or she can't change. So we're stuck. We either live with these flaws or we end the relationship. Those are kind of the choices. In a growth mindset, people understand that they can grow and the relationship can grow by confronting problems, trying to solve them together, and, mastering that.
Wow. That seems like to counter one of the oldest myths about relationships, which is, you can't change your partner. And it seems like that myth is actually just a reflection of a fixed mindset.
Right. I mean, you maybe can't make your partner change, but you can collaborate with each other on change. So if you feel your partner isn't giving you the affection you want, do you mope and get hostile or go somewhere else? Or do you think, maybe he doesn't understand what I want or how to give it? Let's work on that together.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say then, does this mean that, you can take anybody and they can become an Einstein or a Beethoven?
No, it doesn't mean that anyone could be Einstein or Beethoven. But one thing it means is that Einstein and Beethoven weren't Einstein and Beethoven until they put in years of passionate effort. And it also means we don't know who can become Einstein or Beethoven if they fall in love with, become obsessed with their subject and pursue it vigorously.
So what you're saying is that when we want to figure out who is going to go on to make these kind of contributions, that it may be more important to look at things like purposeful engagement, finding, a passion, rather than trying to measure some fixed ability and making guesses from that.
Exactly. There's wonderful research now by a number of different psychologists showing exactly this, that when you look back and look at equally talented teenagers, the only thing that predicts who becomes great and who makes meaningful contributions is how much effort and deliberate practice they put in.
Wow. That's really powerful and inspirational and illuminating.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. And then also in your book, you talk about not only does this affect education and relationships, it could even affect things like business and those sorts of things. How would you, if there was like a system or a business that you were going to go into and that was having problems, how could a system apply these ideas?
It's very interesting. There's new research showing that when managers have a growth mindset, they're better mentors. They understand that people need training, people can develop, and that a manager isn't just someone who hires a talented person or decides who has it and who doesn't, but is someone who mentors, who monitors people and gives them what they need to grow into their roles. So an organization built around the growth mindset provides learning opportunities and also is an organization where people are allowed to make mistakes and learn from them. For my book, I looked at a number of CEOs. The ones who had the fixed mindset felt that they had to be perfect, infallible, couldn't admit errors, couldn't grow. The ones with a growth mindset really led their organizations to continued success through their own learning, their own admission of fallibility, their understanding that they couldn't know everything. Everything was always changing, and they had to be open to that.
Wow, that is really exciting. Well, thank you very much for your time. I wondered if you could tell our listeners more about where they can find your book and remind us of the title. Very exciting ideas.
The book is Mindset, the one word, The New Psychology of Success. They can find it on Amazon.com. They can get it or order it from their bookstores.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Dweck.
It's been a real pleasure, Laura.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Bye.